Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprint, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you, along with our Friday night guests, for the next 2 hours on this November the 21st on the West Coast, and now in the East and Central time zones, it's November the 22nd. Today is the anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. And what do we have? 37 years plus another 8, 45 years ago today, on as far as the Eastern and Central time zone, we lost a president. And there has not been an honest investigation, although there has been tons and tons of evidence that has come out to show who was involved. And along with the great research of many journalists from around the world, especially here in the United States, and the movies that have been produced exposing a gigantic conspiracy to stop President Kennedy from issuing our own currency in honor of our Constitution in an attempt to defuse the Federal Reserve, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We lost the president, and even today we're struggling with this beast called the Federal Reserve, that is basically taking over the country. It's actually done it quite a long time ago, but it's more prevalent. The fact that they're just throwing money left and right to whomever they choose. And, you know, forget about big multi-billion dollar corporations failing. The American taxpayers will bail them out every time. It's about time that we move out of our fears and start facing reality and look these issues straight in the eye. We're going to talk about that somewhat with tonight's guest. We're going to talk about the concept of fear and how you can move outside of fear and get a handle on virtually any problem that faces you. This is something that you can apply to every aspect of your life. And definitely the issues that are going on in our country. It's about time that Americans start standing up, waking up, and taking positive action to defuse this time bomb that threatens to destroy the whole world. And with that, I'm going to invite back a regular Friday night guest, who is a scientist, an inventor, an author, a lecturer, a teacher, and becoming a talk show host in his own right, my shotgun passenger, and our Friday night guest, as well as our honorary science advisor here on Evident Footprints, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Don. It's good to be back.
Well, you and I started something last week. Actually, it's been 2 weeks now. We went off on a limb with the intention of bringing the regular information that we share every week with our listeners, and we decided that it would be worthwhile to not just talk about all the problems and all the doom and gloom, but actually provide some solutions to the listening audience in response to the many emails that I get where folks are asking, what can I do? We get the message. We understand something is wrong. We see it. We hear about this on the Patriot networks. We're not hearing about what is going on in politics and government and in world affairs, the ecology and science and religion. We're not hearing any truth from the mainstream media. What can we do? And we decided that we would begin sharing what we know as best we can so that we can offer some solutions to folks, something which is not being done a whole lot. There's a heck of a lot of fear-mongering going on. And by that, I mean these incessant accounts of the government's doing this with concentration camps, and they're going to herd people into prisons or into boxcars. The economy's imploding. The stock market is imploding. They're going to draft people up to age 42. One side of their mouth says that all wars are going to end, and at the same time, they're ramping up for another one. Plotting and plotting, lying left and right, not telling us the truth about anything, about why these mega corporations are failing, why not just our economy, but the world's economy is failing, and why they won't just tell us the truth about anything. Obviously, there's much to be hidden, and we've been talking about discernment and talking about really facing these issues dead on, and also from a perspective of higher consciousness. And you once again have agreed to tackle this difficult topic, and we're going to focus not just on fear, but I think we're, in terms of what we've discussed on past shows, I think we can do a lot to empower people by pointing out the different types of fear that exist. Are you game for that this evening, Jim?
Sure, why not? It's actually a very worthwhile subject, Don.
Okay. For purposes of just a brief recap of some of the things that we've talked about on the past shows, allow me, if you would, a moment or two to summarize some of the things that we've talked about. And we can take off from that point, if you would.
Sure, I guess.
Okay. We defined a human being, and we defined a human being in the present tense, and we made a distinction between what the universe, what God or our Creator has intended us to be, and how on this prison planet called Earth, we have been given a completely different set of options or a completely different roadmap that's being changed all the time. Imagine yourself looking at a roadmap and you want to go, say, from New York City to Miami. And every day or every hour or every minute, the roads are being changed. And you have to figure out which way you're going to go. We're witnessing situations like that today. In terms of our basic needs, a roof over our heads, clothing on our bodies and those of our family, and food on the table. Those are our primary concerns. Those happen to be the essence of our core fears, although the biggest fear that everyone has is the fear of dying. And so we approach life escaping death at every moment. Every time we make a decision, we have to weigh if it's a safe decision. And we're operating from the perspective that if we make the wrong decision, we're going to suffer more than we already are. We're going to experience some kind of pain. Pain is usually an indication that there's a problem. And often, we don't create the problems. They're created for us for the purpose of solving them and then taking rights away from us in the process, as if the rights themselves were the cause of the problem. It's insane. to even consider that, and yet that's exactly what's being done. We're shown images of what a successful human being looks like. And we pursue success because from the time we're born, we're trained to follow a program, to follow rules, to follow laws. And as we're learning what these rules and these laws are, we move in and out of trouble because we either break these laws unconsciously or unintentionally, or when we act a certain way, the powers that be decide that they don't want us acting that way, particularly out of our freedom or out of our sovereignty, where we make our own decisions. They prefer to tell us when to go to bed, when to get up, when to eat, when to work, when to sleep, when to play, when to get sick, when to get well, when to worship, or whether or not we even have a right to worship, how to protect ourselves, who's going to protect ourselves. And they sell us on this need for security. While they tell us that to be secure, they will protect us, they start wars in other parts of the world, or even create false flag events in our own country and blame it on someone else for the purpose of going elsewhere and starting another war. And while they sell us on security, our own or that of the rest of the world, they kill millions of people. Another form of insanity. So if we begin to look at the world's problems and the things that we're told, and compare the things we're told and the actions of those telling us what's going on, none of it makes any sense. One can assume that we're being lied to intentionally. And that's exactly what's happening. And so we're getting a false representation of reality. We're getting illusion. They show us images of what a successful person is, a healthy person, a happy person. And we chase after these dreams. And we do it even to our own detriment. We get ourselves in debt. We lose our homes. We lose our jobs. We lose opportunities to move ahead in life. And it's a constant struggle. Again, another form of insanity. We keep repeating the same mistakes over and over, expecting that somehow we might get lucky and something that didn't work a million times before might work the next time. Yet we seem to be going around in circles on a merry-go-round or a Ferris wheel, horizontally or vertically, it doesn't matter. A circle is a circle. Often we feel like we're in a hamster cage on an exercise wheel, going real fast but going nowhere fast. And so we begin to ask questions. Why are we here? Or why am I here? Those of us who are awakening, that is, because the majority of folks are just moving through these processes that I've described on a daily basis, and they're not really giving any consideration to it. Now, to solve problems, we must face the fact that the problems exist, and we must realize, and it's quite obvious, that government, who is creating the problems, has no intention of solving them. We can't expect them to solve them, and we can't wait for a savior to come and solve them for us. We are our own saviors, and we are our own government. In fact, those in the government are supposed to be our servants. It's written that way in the Constitution, it's written that way in the Bill of Rights, and it's written that way in the laws. Although there are many laws that make no sense and are just means of further obfuscating the truth, hiding the truth from us. We must agree that if we're going to solve problems, that we have to communicate with each other, and we have to do so intelligently as adults with the intention of becoming aware of what the problems are and aware of what the solutions are and aware of who we are. And we must focus our attention on that until we achieve success. There's no other way about it. To turn away from the problem and pretend like it doesn't exist doesn't make the problem go away. it only assures us failure in solving it when we don't pay our put our attention on it. Now I'm speaking rather elementary or in an elementary fashion to most listeners, yet do we really even consider these things on a day-to-day basis? Do we really look at problems and understand all they are undesirable results? Our failure to address problems and to expect others to solve them makes us just as guilty, if you want to put the blame anywhere, as those who are creating the problems. Our lack of responsibility or our lack of concern, our lack of focus, our lack of awareness or attention on these problems, as well as searching for solutions, which will come through our imagination and our God-given creativity, will suffer until we finally wake up and decide that we're going to do something about it. Most of us don't do anything about it because of fear. It's this sometimes tangible feeling that paralyzes us. When we go into analyzing problems, we have a tendency to analyze ourselves, and we become paralyzed by the very fear that supports and allows these problems to continue. So we must also learn to think more from the heart. We have a mind that thinks, but they, the media and the powers that be, have caused us to worship idols and worship images and concepts that are of the mind, backed by emotion or supported by emotion, all created with music and colors and pictures and special effects and other types of sounds that reach some aspect of us and pull us into a particular vibration, which is intended much lower usually than who we really are. So in the process of us expanding, we must be aware of where our true nature is. They have separated us from God, and as a result, we look elsewhere for our solutions. We have to come back to a remembering of who we are, a remembering of our purpose, and a remembering of where we're headed. Now, I could go on and on and on and on, but I wouldn't be very fair to tonight's guest. But these are some of the things that we've talked about, and moving into fear, we're going to discuss the obvious types of fear, and we're going to discuss those types that are not so obvious. We may apply some of this to scientific reasoning or religious reasoning or just everyday discernment of how these qualities and these influences affect us. That sort of encompasses everything we talked about, Jim, although, you know, we could go on for hours on any of these particular topics.
Yeah, I realize that. Well, since you finally focused on the main issue, why don't we start with something pretty rudimentary that I was involved with a number of years ago, and which I think fits right into what you're describing. When I was a kid, grew up in New Jersey, and there was a very big mixture of different nationalities congregating in that part of the state at that time. And there were some few people that had come to my town from the islands, meaning the Caribbean islands. And I had met some people from Haiti and befriended them. And I think it was probably because I was just a kid and pretty much innocent but extremely curious and not at all prejudiced towards these folks that they opened up to me in a lot of ways. But I learned a couple of lessons from these people that I never forgot. And it all stemmed from a question that I asked regarding the ancient art of voodoo. And they explained a lot of different things to me about ritual, about spiritual forces, psychological suggestions, and all these different things. And what I have distilled out of all of that is really pretty interesting. If you are raised in an environment like what used to exist, for instance, in Haiti back in the 50s or 40s, or even earlier, where from the time that you're a child, you're told to beware the witch doctor. And he's got power to do this, and he's got power to do that. Never cross the guy. If you do, he can put a curse on you, and you will become very ill, or you will die, or any number of other things can happen. He can affect your love life, your fortune, your health, and on and on and on. So interestingly enough, someone that's growing up in that atmosphere and is entirely submerged in it on a daily basis, inadvertently falls into the very proper mode, which allows the witch doctor to have power over his constituency. And so, if a teenage boy, for instance, was to inadvertently get the witch doctor angry at him, if he put a curse on this child, the psychological impact of having the man go through this ritualistic approach and terrifying him with all of these chants and cutting the heads off of chickens and all these other things that happens, would immediately bring into play all of the horrible stories that he had heard ever since he was a kid about what can happen if you tick off the witch doctor. And because of his fear and his belief in the system, he immediately plays into that entire thing and responds by, through his own power of suggestion, he responds to the energies produced by the witch doctor. And if he's cursed for health or for poverty or infertility or whatever it may be, he brings those effects to bear upon himself because, A, he has been programmed to believe that this is so ever since he was a child. B, he's terrified of the witch doctor, just like the boogeyman or any other fictitious entity that we are exposed to, you know, in early life and given a negative spin toward. And, of course, the power of his own mind is unleashed upon himself. And the result is that he develops actual physiological disorders, which can range from, you know, just mild hysteria all the way down through sickness and death. And the reason that I start off with this, Don, is because if you read up on voodoo, you find out that it's a very powerful thing, but it only has power in its own environment. Because what gives it power is the belief of the people who practice it. And the witch doctor has power over the people because they believe that he has power over the people, which is very convenient for the witch doctor. Mm-hmm. And this all has incredibly striking parallels to the situation that we have existing in the United States right now. Now, we are immersed in a particular atmosphere from birth reveal? What are the consequences of doing certain things? What we're supposed to do, what we're not supposed to do. And there's a whole collection of boogeymen in our environment that will jump out and grab you if you violate any of these dictates. And whether we realize it or not, it's a control mechanism that is directed towards our psyche from the time that we are old enough to be cognizant of what's happening until we finally kick the bucket. And it's a form of voodoo, folks. It's an intense conditioning that is worked into the matrix of the society in which we are born and bred. And the result is an unthinking and unquestioning form of control, which results in us doing exactly what we are told. And the underlying mechanism that makes it work is fear. And I thought that was a good way of introducing the subject, because essentially the two cultures are identical.
Mm-hmm. If I could comment, along with all these definitions that I gave, describing the different makeup of who we think we are and who we have been constructed to be in terms of the world, we identify with the ego, or the I, and very cleverly, and you hit upon one of the aspects of what reinforces that mindset, and that is that word belief, which is an assumption that something is so. It's not based upon knowledge, it's based on what we're told. And it takes a heck of a lot of conditioning to create that belief system. Anything that we believe is known, and so our belief system stays in the past. It paralyzes us, because we can't change the past, it's already occurred. And yet, everything we learn in school is based upon the past. Only in the most nurturing and the most wholesome educational environment will we learn something about the present or something about the future. But even the present and the future is always referred to in the context of the past, as long as the ego is involved. Until we recognize that we are one and the same. And notice I said we are, not we were, one and the same. We are one and the same, but we have been taught, which is a past tense again, that we are separate. We are separate from our Creator. We are separate from each other. And all the mechanisms used to form public opinion, public behavior, public compliance with their agenda is operating from that past sense and through the ego. Now, if we move into knowing, we immediately move ourselves out of belief, and we immediately move ourselves into the present, where now our creativity and our individuality can take place. And our individuality is that aspect, if you remember what we talked about a couple of weeks ago, and I'm just reviewing this. Our individuality is our wholeness, or our holiness, or the sacred aspect of who we are. And it includes our spirituality, which is one reason why this control system that they have set up is so important to them, to keep us separate from our spirituality, or to switch off our spirituality, to prevent us from recognizing it and utilizing it. So, as we talk, maybe we can keep things in a perspective that we can talk about the past, but let's realize, let's recognize, and let's remember that what we're striving to do is to cause the listener to consider what it would be like now, and how we can recreate a future by thinking in the now instead of thinking in the past. If the past had the answers, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in. Would you agree with that, Jim?
Well, of course. But, you know, the interesting thing is moving from that position, which is impressed upon us by all this conditioning, to a point where you realize that you're no longer in the embrace of that conditioning, and you suddenly feel a certain freedom and a certain empowering. And it's making that transition that I thought we wanted to focus on tonight, because regardless of how many different types of fears there are real time-honored formulas for breaking the bonds to those fears and realizing that the only real fear is fear itself. And that's not necessarily easy to do. That's the most important thing we need to get across. It's very doable, but it's like all the other things we talked about in the past few shows. It really requires a great deal of effort. Now, what I've learned is that most people are willing to exert the effort if they're sincere about breaking those bonds. The problem is they don't often know how to go about it. And don't you think it's amazing that with all of the other things that we're given instructions about, even to the point of taking medicines that can kill you to get rid of your headache or warts or whatever other condition you're suffering from, there's no instruction to tell you how to shed your fears. And the mere fact that the issue is avoided entirely should be an indication that it's something they don't want us to linger upon.
Well, of course, that's the main focal point of everything going on, is to create fear. I mentioned the word security. They keep using this word security. We have a government agency called Homeland Security, yet it offers no security whatsoever.
There's a lot of trickery involved in just the naming of something, because the name basically hinges upon a suggestion. It doesn't mean it's true.
Yes.
And, you know, you mentioned the concept of reacting to these terms and to these different suggestions and how fear is the hidden mechanism. One of the earliest experiences that I can remember that I think exemplifies this, not only in me, but in all of us. That happened when I was about 6 or 7 years old. My dad had been a contemporary with Johnny Weissmuller and very interested in swimming. And he was an excellent and very powerful swimmer. And he had at one time hoped to be an Olympic contender, but his health didn't hold up. So when I came along, he started training me to swim at a very early age. And we had the good fortune of having access to some pretty good-sized swimming pools in Jersey City and up and down the Jersey coast. So it was almost a natural after a while to engage in this particular sport. And not only did I like it, but it afforded me a real special relationship with my dad in the coaching effort and what have you. And because of my enjoyment of the sport and his participation, I did very well very quickly. And I was a very fast swimmer even when I was pretty young. So finally, after considerable training, he asked me if I'd like to try and participate in a swim meet. And I said, sure, why not? And he said, well, he said, you know, we've been timing you, and you're doing really well. And he says, I'm sure that you can place nicely in this thing and possibly even win. And so we went up to Pavonia Pool in New Jersey, and he got me involved in a race. And I was very tall, very muscular as a kid, and I stood there at the edge of the pool, and I looked back and forth at the other contenders. And in my mind, I automatically knew that I was probably the best equipped to win the race. And as fate would have it, there was a guy standing to my right who was shorter than me, and I might be guessing about this, but he didn't look as muscular as myself or as well-trained as myself. And I didn't have any concerns about beating him. But just before we stepped up on the platforms to actually get ready for the gunshot, he turned to me and he said, it's impossible for you to beat me. And I went through all of the motions, got up on the platform, the gun went off, and I came in like fourth. And my father said to me, what the heck happened to you? And I was very embarrassed, and I didn't feel very good about the whole experience. And I said to him, well, that guy said that it was impossible for me to beat him. And so my dad said, well, why did you believe it? And I said, I don't know. He just said it with so much authority. And I've never forgotten that experience, because now, looking back on it, if someone says that to me, my first suspicion is that if he wasn't afraid of losing, he wouldn't have mentioned it in the first place. But when you're a seven-year-old boy, you don't think of those things. But the underlying mechanism, the fear that was induced by his confidence and by his statement, had actual physical effects on what might have otherwise been a victory for me. And this is exactly the kind of thing that happens throughout our lives constantly, perhaps on a more subliminal level. We're not necessarily aware that these things are being done to us, but they are. And they have very, very pronounced effects. Just look at the difference between our American society today in the year 2008 and the same fiber of the people that was expressed back, let's say, in the 30s or the 50s. Absolutely different. And I've lived long enough to see the difference. And it's all been done to us by continually programming us and training us that we respond to these subtle fears and these erectors who are stationed throughout our society. You understand what I'm getting at, Don?
Yeah, absolutely. You're describing the limitations that have been given to us. And it wasn't necessarily, I'm sure you would agree, that it wasn't necessarily the confidence of this young man, but it was the fact that he made the statement as though he knew something you didn't.
Exactly.
And he got you to buy into that whole thing. This is the nature of belief that I'm referring to, that it disempowers one because it's presented from a position of perceived authority. And we're taught to respect authority, and yet we never question the right of that authority to even exist. Who are these authorities telling us these things? Are they not our servants? It seems to me that the way the country was founded, that's what they were. Anyone working for the government was a public servant. They took a civil service examination that was to qualify them for the role, that they had a modicum of intelligence and the ethics or the integrity to carry out the job in the best possible way. And yet, while that was what we were presented with behind the scenes, these people were stealing money and doing things to undermine the well-being of the whole nation. Always coming up with an excuse, always coming up with some really implausible reason that they made plausible through the method in which it was delivered to us.
And it's always disguised as being done in our best interest, when in reality it's in their best interest.
Yes. And that's an illusion. Now, fear is an illusion. We can agree on that, regardless of whether it's a conscious fear or a subconscious fear. We have many subconscious fears that that go beyond our day-to-day needs. One is fear of success, and its opposite, fear of failure. Both hold some kind of mysterious power over us, and have a paralyzing effect on us not taking action. The result is people procrastinate, or they begin to explain away their reason for not doing something because they are alone, which is in denial of their true nature. As an individual, of course they're alone. But at the same time, in denying who they are, they're also denying their relationship to everything else that exists. And right there, I think, is the whole key to why we can't get a grasp on who we are. Because we've bought into all these fallacies and these fantasies, these lies about who we are and who has our best interests at heart. Again, if these people, as many presidents as we've had elected, it seems like one of them would finally keep their promise and do what they told us they were going to do. We have hundreds of people working supposedly on our behalf, making sure that the three forms of government that we have, or the three branches of our government, are which are supposed to be checks and balances, are actually doing their job, when in reality they're all in collusion together. They're all conspiring against us for their own self-interest. So every time we look at a fear, we can find usually a cause somewhere not too far removed from that very fear itself that shows us where that came from. And within it lies the solution on how to extricate ourselves from it. We call it the matrix, or inside the box. And a day doesn't go by where I don't talk to someone or communicate with someone who's still operating out of some illusion that they read in a history book, or something that they heard from the mainstream media that very day. If these people had the answers, we would not have the problems we have. And we have to awaken to that fact as a starting point, as a motivational factor for changing things. You agree?
Oh, absolutely. And I'd like to take it a step further than that. Not all fear is based on psychological suggestion. But the effects can be just as real, just as deadly. When I was just a little guy, my dad had an office at 555 Fifth Avenue, which is essentially the Empire State Building. And on his side of the office, it opened out over Broadway. And he took me to New York one time, and he was all cranked up, and the reason for it was apparently General MacArthur was being given this huge parade in New York. And he opened the window on the far side of the office, and he actually sat me out on the ledge. Of course, he had his arm around me, but he still sat me out on the ledge. And my feet were hanging off the ledge, and I don't remember exactly how high up we were, but I can tell you it was a heck of a good distance. You know, at least 15, 20 floors. I certainly wouldn't want to fall. And even though I enjoyed the experience, I was really terrified of that whole thing, and it began to engender a concern for heights. And then when I was in, I guess it was the sixth grade, and you read my book that I wrote called Tunnels.
Yes.
I was exploring some ravines and such in Jersey City that were actually man-made cuts, which had been created for the various railroads. And I was doing this with a companion on a winter's day and slid down an ice floe and literally went off the cliff. And on the way down, only by the grace of God, I managed to snag a drill rod that was sticking out of the rock. And here I am suspended about 70 feet in the air above the tracks below. And naturally, I was rescued, or I wouldn't be here talking to you, and that's a story in its own right. But the point I want to make was that, you know, various effects of that sort instilled an enormous fear of heights for me. After that, I was really pretty concerned about heights. And one day, but I was also drawn to it, which is a kind of an interesting thing. I mean, there were areas in Jersey where there were a lot of cliffs and palisades and ravines and things of that nature, which were very adventurous places. And what I wound up doing in order to conquer the fear of heights was I became a climber, a rock climber. And I did that as a sport for at least 15 years. And by the end of that time, I didn't have any overt fear of heights anymore. So the first thing, Don, is you have to recognize what it is that you're afraid of. And the second thing is you have to make a conscious decision that you're going to conquer that fear. And then the third thing, you have to take some kind of action. You have to literally find out, well, what is it that you're afraid of? What aspect of heights, you know, is it that concerns you? Well, of course, you don't want to fall. And the only way that you can really conquer that is by becoming familiar with how you react and how you feel while you're exposed to different levels of height. And I started by climbing various grades of rock that were, you know, so simple and easy to conquer that I didn't even need equipment. But after about 4 or 5 years, I was doing level 5 and level 6 climbing involving ropes and pitons and carabiners and belay systems and all kinds of stuff, and I rappelled and prussicked and did all kinds of things that mountaineers do, and I did it without any concern at all. So fighting to conquer your fears is not done in one giant step. You have to approach the subject with the knowledge of what you're doing and take small steps until you inflate your consciousness to the point where you suddenly find that you have a great deal of confidence in what you're doing. And you realize at some point, and it's very impossible for me to explain just how that point is reached, but the symptoms are that you suddenly have this incredible feeling of liberation, and you know that it no longer bothers you. You're just as cautious as you were before, because instinctively you know that the height can still hurt you, but you don't have the same attitude about it. And that comes from knowledge, exposure, and determination. And we can apply that methodology to any fear that you want to discuss. Wouldn't you say, Don?
Yes, you remind me of something that Jiddu Krishnamurti taught, and that was that fear is different. It means something different to each person. Just like one person might perceive what you were describing in terms of this distance from the ground that you were sitting on the ledge of the window in that skyscraper, your mind doesn't know, and your body, your whole being doesn't really know how to handle that situation. And the fear that you feel might be totally different to me. It might take on a whole different characteristic, have a different physiological or psychological impact upon me, and yet in essence fear is nothing but an illusion, and it has such great power over us, and so we have to really, to understand fear, we have to realize that each one of us is going to have a different feeling and a different perception of what each individual fear is as we describe it. The fear of dying, for example, and what happens to us. Well, if we don't know what's going to happen to us after we die, we're going to fear dying. And we're sold a bill of goods that are supposed to take care of our affairs, for example, insurance. It's supposed to be some sort of a hedge against fear. How having money is supposed to make fear go away about death makes no sense at all. I'm sure you'd agree with that. Yet maybe the person has fear about their family being able to survive once they're gone, especially if you're the breadwinner. Well, that goes back into that fear of not having a home, or not having clothes, or not having food. We've been taught to fear those things, and we've been cut off from our natural nature to be abundant. The universe is teeming with abundance, and yet somehow people have been cut off from it. So,
well, it's only because they allowed it to happen.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And it's on multiple levels. We're constantly reminded about these illusions, that the banks could lose their money, or the dollar could lose its value, or we could lose jobs, or goods would become more expensive, or energy would become less available, and it's all part of the game. It's to keep us from getting a handle on our fears, from confronting our fears and eliminating them.
Well, the interesting thing about that is that there is a perfect parallel right there to the voodoo story that I started this conversation with, because if you were to turn back the clock 1,000 years and standing somewhere in the central plains of North America, there was nobody here except scattered Indian tribes, and you went up to some Indian brave somewhere and started to sell him a bill of goods about how if he didn't do this or that, there wouldn't be any food, or there wouldn't be any buffalo to hunt, or there'd be some problems in surviving, he'd probably bury his hatchet in your head because he knew better. But the interesting thing is, it works because of the environment. You know, we have become so separated from nature. Most of us are living in cities where everything is planned for you, even to the flow of traffic. And so we're forced into this rhythm of everyday living, and there's a certain dependency for our survival upon the arrangement of this so-called civilization. But behind the scenes, everything is controlled, not just the traffic lights, everything. And so it's not until you can extricate yourself from that environment and really examine it that you start to realize, you know, this is an artificial situation, but yet I'm playing the game as if it's real and as if I'm dependent upon it. How did the human race survive for millions of years without these yo-yos at the helm? You know, the only way to find out exactly how that works is you have to leave the city and you have to go out into the wilderness and observe the animals, camp out there for a while, become one with nature, learn about survival. The world hasn't changed that much. It's only in these enclaves of control that are designed to separate us from our true nature that these methodologies can be effective. And you have to start taking these steps to enlighten yourself and to broaden your consciousness before you will start to realize just how enmeshed in the system you really are. Now, I did that. I went and lived in the wilderness for 7 years up by the Canadian border and had numerous experiences. And everybody said I was crazy. I was probably going to freeze to death. I'd have nothing to eat. I'd have no job. I wouldn't have anything. So I said, well, so be it. I went and did it anyway. And you'd be surprised at the kind of education that that was. And that's the kind of thing. We have to get out of our comfort zone. You have to step back and look at what you're really involved with before you understand it. You know, start thinking about if you were setting up a miniature city with a bunch of little toy soldiers, like you're some hidden giant behind the scenes, you know, what would you like these people to be doing in order to benefit you? Just like when you were a kid and you played with toy soldiers, or if you're a female, you played with your dollhouse and you arranged everything internally and you had all these little scenarios that you used to entertain yourself with your toy. That's exactly the picture that you have to look at, and you'll start to see the insanity of the way we're allowing ourselves to live now.
Yeah, I agree. What you're describing, I call frequency control. The stoplights, the stop signs, the road signs serve a purpose, or at least we're told they serve a purpose. I think most people could manage moving through an intersection if they would become aware of what's around them, and they approach a dangerous intersection and slow down and proceed with caution and allow courtesy to rule and integrity, and allow the first person at that intersection to make a turn or proceed onward in a normal fashion. Yet somewhere someone said, well, we've got to control this situation. We've got to have absolute control. And if you violate that control, now you have a penalty to pay. You see, there's an extraction of the illusion of economics. You have to give up some of your financial wealth to make the situation right. In other words, you're given a lesson. And it might even involve imprisonment in a cell, locked up in a cage like a wild animal. And,
sure,
and where
sure.
we got that concept is beyond me, too.
Well,
as far
the thing
as animal,
of it is that the irony of it is, though, that the method works, and we allow it to work. Now, I mean, I'm the first person who would advocate safety. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, we don't want people dying at intersections. But it's just that the overall picture is such that it brings you back to the same thing of constant control, constant interference in your life. And I even go a step further than that, Don, because this happened to me just a few weeks ago. I was going to a friend's house, and I have a problem with my car. It doesn't always stop. And an elderly woman that was going with me to the same place offered to give me a ride. And in Oklahoma, there are quite a few intersections with no lights at all. It's a four-way stop. Sometimes they got signs. Sometimes they don't even have signs.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we come to this intersection, and there was absolutely nothing in sight in any direction whatsoever. And this woman came to a stop, and she hesitated, kept nervously looking back and forth. So I said, well, what are you waiting for? There's nobody here. Oh, she says, somebody's liable to come any minute. Well, I said, well, you know, but it's clear now. Oh, no, she said, you have to be so cautious. And then, you know, while we were talking, a big truck came along. She goes, you see? Well, I mean, you could spend your entire day sitting there doing that, you know. But the fear of not being able to make her own decision because there was no red light, there was no green light. And it just was amazing to me how, because at other intersections, she never displayed that behavior. When the light was green, she knew she could go. And it's just amazing to me that someone can be so paralyzed by a sudden change in the procedure that they're used to.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, I watched the movie The Shawshank Redemption, which is one of my favorite films.
That's a great movie.
And, it is. It's a masterpiece. And, you know, the thing that happens to these guys, they spend 40 or 50 years in jail, and then when they finally get out, they can't function because they've been in there too long. And that's exactly what happened to this poor woman. She was not institutionalized, but she was programmed, you know, to respond only to light. And without the guidepost of these lamps, she was petrified.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happens to all of us to some degree in this type of an environment.
Well, not that I want to move into irony here, but we have our own sort of frequency control on Evident Footprints, and it's time for us to take a commercial break. So when we come back, let's talk about the dependency on these controls and how fear is manipulated, okay?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay, folks, you're listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. We'll be right back after these messages. Don't go away. We're having an audio problem there. That was supposed to be a spot for the Idaho Observer. The Idaho Observer is one of a handful of newspapers in the United States of America that is and has been for the past 12 years printing the truth about a number of topics that are critical to Americans and people all over the world. If you're interested in subscribing to The Observer, it's a monthly publication, and for a very reasonable price, a nominal price, you can receive it at your home. You can call area code 208-255-2307. Again, that number is area code 208-255-2307, and speak to Don Harkins or Amy Kath. Become a subscriber. It's a wonderful paper, and I happen to write for that paper myself occasionally, and I know that they're good people. They care about their country. They're very patriotic, and they also are concerned about getting the truth out. Ingrid herself also promotes vaccination liberation, and there are many articles each month coming out about the information that's being revealed to the public regarding the flu vaccines and pandemics and the effect that premature or unnecessary vaccines has on children, creating autism and other diseases later on in life. And you want to keep up with those things and make sure that you're making the best decisions. Again, the Idaho Observer is a proud sponsor of Evident Footprints and BBS Radio as well. Now, coming back, Jim, we were talking about this issue of frequency control and our dependency on other people making our decisions for us. And I think when we feel fear and we can't identify that fear, or we've been conditioned to not even recognize that there's a fear there, but just act a certain way, sort of like robots or zombies. You have to admit that we have an uphill battle, not to use a pun, you know, when you were talking about your mountain climbing. Do you think that, or do you sense that people are waking up to some of the things that are going on, and they're coming to a point where they're recognizing that somewhere along the line someone's going to have to make some decisions and face these issues honestly and with the intent on changing things? Or are we so paralyzed by that fear that it looks hopeless? What is your feeling?
Well, actually, I've noticed, first of all, let me just say this. I've been fortunate enough to live in almost every quadrant of the United States. And as a result of that, I have pretty decent exposure to a very large cross-section of our nation's populace. And a lot of the things that we're discussing are very regionalized in the way that they behave. It seems to me that there's a great deal more fear, a great deal more subserviency to the laws and the dictates of the system on the coastal regions, and especially in the large cities, than there is, for instance, in the central and northern parts of the United States, because people are still savoring their freedoms. They're still involved more with nature and the outdoors, and their attitude is, I'll do as I damn please. And they do. And so I've noticed the difference a great deal. And one of the areas where it's really pronounced is in the gun laws. I can't begin to get into all of that because it's just so amazing to me. But you hear people bad-mouthing guns constantly, especially in the cities and the heavily populated areas. The only ones who don't have any concern about it are the hoodlums who carry them. But the interesting thing is 90% of the people who are against guns have never even held one, never mind fired one. They wouldn't know what to do with it. And, you know, it's the same old story. You know, it's this, they somehow adopt this attitude because it's been laid upon them by a figure of authority, but they really don't know anything about what they're talking about. And yet, in the North Woods, for instance, where I lived for, 9 years or so, a person just, male or female, wouldn't be caught dead without being familiar with weapons and how to use them. And the attitude is entirely different. I mean, we could spend the whole show just talking about that. That's how big the difference is. So this is true of a lot of different things. Like, for instance, we don't, if you're raised in the city, we don't think anything of, how many different law enforcement agencies are there? You know, you got your police, you got your FBI, you got the ATF, you got, I don't even know how many different organizations. And we're programmed between the TV shows and everything else that we witness in our lives to anticipate the fact that they can come bursting through your front door anytime they please, and they're in their rights to do so. And people in cities actually, buy into that. Whereas out here and in other areas where I lived, if somebody did that unexpectedly, there's a very good chance they'd get blown right off the porch. So a lot of these things are very regionally separated somehow. And it seems to go back to the idea that the more crowded an area and the more densely populated it is, for some reason, the more these controls are exerted and the better effects they have. That's my observation on that. So, is it hopeless? Well, I'd have to say no, it's not hopeless, but I definitely see that we're evolving into a race of two extremes. I think you're going to find that there are people who will savagely fight to keep their freedoms, because they already know that they're being taken away little by little. And you have another group, which unfortunately may be a larger group, which is so well conditioned that they may just do whatever they're instructed to do, which is very unfortunate.
But, well, what you're saying is very true, and I'm sure there are millions of Americans that own guns, and yet on 9/11, there were 19, according to the official story, there were 19 Arab hijackers, and we don't even know how many box cutters they had, and somehow a handful of jets and a handful of box cutters brought down two 110-story skyscrapers and a 47-story skyscraper, and they haven't outlawed jets nor box cutters.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because the whole thing is so insane, it's ridiculous. How many people are killed in the United States in a given year by guns versus how many people are killed by automobiles in accidents of every description? I don't see anybody making movement to outlaw the automobile. Of course, there's a slight difference there, because the automobile presents the people in control with an endless supply of financial rewards you could start to enumerate them, you'd be here all night. But the auto industry, combined with the gasoline industry, is a cash cow of ungodly proportions. So naturally, it's not going to be outlawed. But you don't have to go to that extreme. What about knives? What about hammers? Baseball bats? Broken bottles? Crowbars? Tire irons? Slingshots? You know, I mean, it goes on and on and on. If you're really sincere about all this, outlaw everything.
Yeah, it's quite crazy. You go to a professional baseball game, and you might have the threat of inclement weather, and they outlaw bringing an umbrella to the game because you might be able to stay dry, and in the process block the view of other fans who are more likely as well to be sitting under an umbrella. And yet they have bat day, and they give everybody a baseball bat. Tell me that that makes any more sense than banning umbrellas.
Well, nothing makes any sense. I mean, you know, have you ever seen some of the fights that break out at games when things don't work out so well? Imagine if that happened on bat day. Now you'd be in the midst of a fray of flying brains. But nobody seems to care about those things. I mean, the real crux of the issue boils down to the fact that they really don't want an armed society. Because when things are working properly, the government fears the people. And when there's a dictatorship brewing, the people fear the government. And so in order to make sure that the government has the upper hand, they have been trying to disarm the populace of the United States for years. Now, you know, they've succeeded in doing it in England, and they succeeded in doing it in Australia. And within 1 year's time of disarming the populace, the crime increased some ridiculous amount, like 1,000%. And there wasn't a person interviewed that said, oh, my God, we made the worst mistake imaginable allowing this to happen. Because now the only people that have guns are the criminals. And that's absolutely true. If they pass a law to ban firearms in this country, do you really think that the Al Capones and the other types of that sort are going to voluntarily hand over their weapons? Never happens. You know, the only people that will be without any protection will be the very people who are concerned for their well-being in the first place. And why is that? Because of fear. They're afraid of being mugged. They're afraid of guns. They're afraid of this. They're afraid of that. It's just amazing how much fear is in our lives. And before you mentioned fear of death, I really wanted to comment on that. When I was a kid, I saw so many of my relatives die that it's really unbelievable. By the time I reached my teens, most of the family that I had known as my family had all perished. And so I had a lot of occasion to think about dying and think about death. And I remember how fearful the whole thing was every time I went to a wake. I still remember my grandfather being waked in the front room of our house and me kissing him goodbye in the coffin. You know, I remember that very clearly. And there's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of fear associated with all of that, part of which is natural. But finally, I just saw so much of it that I sat back and I started really thinking about it rather than just reacting to it. And when you do that, you come to a very interesting conclusion if you analyze the situation with a clear head. Here we are immersed in a sea of life. Life is so prolific on this planet. Of course, it's not as prolific as it used to be before we got here, but still, it's pretty prolific. And we see manifestations of life in every description, in the animal kingdom, in the vegetable kingdom, in so many different ways that we actually take it for granted. And yet, despite this, we miss a very, very important message, which you can only see if you really look at the whole situation with a clear head. Everything, everything that lives dies. And so, if we trust in the greater knowledge of the Creator, that's all you really have to know to realize that whatever death is, it's part of the bigger scheme of things. It's part of creation, and therefore it can't be bad, and it shouldn't be feared. Now, there are exceptions to that. For instance, nobody that I know of wants to see a young child lose his life, or you know, someone that we love lose their life unnecessarily. And those things are always going to bring about, you know, terrible emotional responses. But barring that, and just looking at it from the standpoint of the general fear of death, I think it's totally unnecessary. Whatever death is, we're all going to experience it, and it's part of the big picture, it's part of the scheme of things. And if you really understand life and you have belief that there's a supreme being, there's no reason to fear death. I'm much more concerned about life. And I think that's the right attitude to have.
Yeah.
So, go ahead, Tom.
In light of what you just said and what I said earlier about death, much like we talk about things being transformed from one place to another, you know, you can't destroy energy; you can only transform it.
Exactly.
Or transmute it. And death of anything really is a state of a transmutation into another realm. And that's another one of those things that's kept from our knowledge. It's not something that we have been taught to understand and to experience from that perspective. We've been taught to fear it, as I alluded to earlier, that we have to subscribe to all of these illusory solutions to help us cope with it. Insurance and a cemetery plot bought for you before that time comes, and to have all your affairs in order. And I'm not saying that that's not important at all, but that somehow if they're not, that you have failed, or if they're not, that you're going to go to hell. There's going to be some continued punishment somewhere along the line. And so we buy into these things, not even realizing where that fear resides. You know, the experience of losing someone in your family is a heart-wrenching experience. It's something that one feels in the heart, not in the mind. If one becomes hysterical, then certainly there's a disconnect and someone's operating out of that mind heart that's been created by the false media, by the propaganda, by the brainwashing, by the incessant alluding to the reality of the false self, as if somehow telling someone how they look is going to make them feel better, and if they feel better, then they're a better person, or they're acceptable to everyone else. When in reality, that's merely a mental construct. And it has nothing to do with the reality of who we really are. So our fears about death are also unjustified for that reason, because that becomes purely a mental process and has nothing to do with our actual connection, our real connection with that person in life. Whether it's a relative or a friend or a business associate, could even be someone that we don't like. we can feel that pain or that sense of loss in that respect, because some part of us does know the truth. Some part of us really knows it. The problem we have is that we are not aware of that. It's a very simple matter to arrive at learning how to cope with those things. And in fact, the more we open up to those realities and how that information already resides within us, the more we're able to do that, the less we depend on that mental construct. That's what's occurring right now, which has the powers that be very scared, that they've invested all this time and all this money and all these methods, all these plans, in a secret way, because they were fearful of us finding out, so they had to be secret about it. they see that they're losing the grip on that. And that's the very reason why we're experiencing more insanity and more chaos, because that affects the mind, but it does not affect the heart at all. It's intended to keep our focus off of the heart, off of who we really are. That's my rant.
No, it's not a rant. I think that those are well-chosen words and very true. You know, the fact of the matter is death, sex, and health, and a lot of other things are kept at arm's length deliberately. You know, because they're really afraid that if you get in close enough to feel comfortable with these subjects in the way that the Creator intended you to, that they're going to lose some other measure of control. You know, here's another thing. I remember when I was a kid, it was not unusual, for instance, to receive spanking at school, to have physical punishment by your parents and by other people. I'm not saying that I enjoyed that. Nobody does. But I think that that's a right that has been taken away from us. You know, now, if you want to admonish your children with a spanking, you can actually get arrested for doing that, and that's idiotic. Look at the other side of the coin. I was beat up so many times when I was a kid just for being different that I eventually reached the point after high school where I said, you know what, enough of this. And so I started studying martial arts. And I may not be Bruce Lee, but, you know, I have some pretty well-founded fundamentals under my belt, and I use them. And it does empower you. You can't go through life fearing everything and everyone. What kind of nonsense is that? So, you know, that's a message that I can share readily with other people. You know, if you're afraid of being accosted or bullied or any of those things, don't just sit there and cower about it. Face your fear. Go down to the local dojo and sign up and get involved with martial arts. First of all, you'll lose weight. It's good for your cardiovascular system. You'll make new friends. You'll expand your consciousness because you'll learn about things you never had any idea of. And you'll be prepared to deal with some various forms of adversity depending upon your conditioning. You know, it's the same with everything. You can't just bear it and continue going forward and hope for the best. That's not living. If you have a fear, and I don't care what it is, find a way to face it. You know, when I was younger, I got to the point where I wasn't afraid of so many things that I signaled myself out as being different. And then I had to contend with that, which was another form of fear. But I don't feel badly about it. I think that if everybody was basically fearless, we would have the problems that we have in this society. But you can't allow people to dictate fears to you and then actually adopt those attitudes, because when you do that, you're playing right into the hands of the people who are running the system. So I think that that's the very first thing that has to be done. You have to stop believing that all this nonsense that you're being told and directed to do is for your good. If it's for your good, why are you such a mess? Why are you such a wreck? It's obviously for the benefit of somebody else. Whenever somebody says they're doing something for your good, grab your hip pocket, because that's really what they're after in some way, shape, or form. Wouldn't you say so, Don?
Yeah, and what you were describing about the corporal punishment, whether it's paddling or your parents actually exerting their parental authority and giving you a spanking to keep you in line, the fact that they have criminalized these things is rather ironic when the very people that create those laws have no problem turning your children into slaves, abducting them, selling them into sex slave rings, committing pedophile acts upon them, even murdering them as part of their little fetishes, and all with the intent of destroying the American family. And this is going on all over the world. It's not just happening to Americans, but, you know, primarily since we're talking about the issues facing this country upon which the world right now is hinging and the future of the rest of the world, it has a lot of significance. But they have ways of twisting the language and the meaning of what's going on in a way that they're on the verge of criminalizing thought about that. You know, we're told we have freedom of speech. We're a democratic society, they like to say, and they're spreading democracy around the world. But in the process of spreading democracy, not only are they destroying families in other countries, they're destroying their population. They're murdering innocent people that have nothing to do with the issues at hand and never had anything to do with the issues at hand. Where is the insanity? Is it in what they're doing, or is it in allowing us to allow them to do that? And to tolerate it and explain it away as if what they're demanding of us really makes any sense at all, or if somehow it's based in truth. It never ceases to amaze me all the different terms that they can make up to try to discredit someone that brings the truth to the light, and or the fallacies to the light, the falsehoods, the illusions. They definitely don't want that to happen, yet it's happening, whether they like it or not. It's going to keep happening.
Well, as you mentioned, a lot of these terms are so asinine, like politically correct.
Yes.
You know, that really grates on my hide. I couldn't care less what's politically correct. You know, I'm only interested in moving forward with truth. And, well, you know, it's not even politically correct to investigate alternate energy, because the mindset and the prevailing wisdom tells you, well, you can't have anything more than what we have now. Oil and energy have become synonymous. You might as well stick with what we have and see if we can make better gasoline engines or something. God forbid you look in another direction, everybody will shun you. I mean, it's just nonsense.
What is the benchmark, Jim, do you think, for measuring what is politically correct when politicians lie and politicians cheat and steal and condone murder and every other abhorrent quality that a human being could conceive of? What is the benchmark of what is politically correct?
Well, you know, there's a thing called meta talk, which everybody should learn about. And what it really means is that if you listen, really listen to what's being said, there are hidden truths in every word. Now, you brought up one a few weeks ago, which was kind of interesting, concerning the idea of these Intel chips, where the advertisement says Intel inside. And
yes,
we spoke at length about the fact that this essentially means that they have an eavesdropping capability through these chips, which are in everything from our computers and TVs and stereos and phones and God only knows what the heck else. And so that's an example of meta talk. It's whether it's done intentionally or whether it's done subconsciously, there are a lot of phrases which have contained in them a very important kernel of truth if we're willing to sit back and listen to what's really being said. And actually, the term politically correct is one of those. Because what does it really mean? It means it's something that's correct for those who are involved in politics. Doesn't mean it's correct for you. May not even do you any good. Often it's quite the contrary, but it becomes acceptable behavior for a certain group of people, and instead of us chastising them for being that way, we're encouraged to join the ranks and actually support them, whether it's the use of certain words or certain laws or tolerating certain things. One of the things that absolutely drives me crazy is the fact that you can get some screwball atheist that he can come in and upset the entire apple cart by saying that we're not allowed to have public Christmas decorations anymore, and the Ten Commandments can't be displayed in public municipal offices and things of that sort. And why is it that the entire rest of the population that is involved in various religions have to succumb to this one exception? What about the rights of all the other people? I mean, you know, but see, it's not politically correct. You know, you have to honor the whims of the minority, no matter how insignificant they may be. And
well,
there's so many examples of that it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, if you give that a little bit of thought, I brought this up on a show a couple of weeks ago when my guest was Reverend Roxy Hampton. And we brought up the fact that they took God out of the schools. They made it illegal to pray to God, or illegal to say a prayer in school. One person came forward and changed that for the whole country. Now, if you step back a moment and look at that, and who represented that person? You know, it was the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. Now, Is that not an oxymoron there? The American Civil Liberties Union. Well, it just named one American. It was singular. It wasn't plural. Do you not think that was just somebody, a stooge from the intelligence agencies? In fact, no one ever met this person, as far as I know. I don't know if this person was actually filmed. Well, you know, if anyone saw a picture of this person, you know, there was a name, but did anyone look up this person to see where this person was from, even though they told us where they were from? Remember, they told us where Barack Obama is from, and he still hasn't been able to prove that. And he's the president-elect of our country, so likely it was just an intelligence ploy just to hoodwink the public. I mean, if you think about it, that's likely what it was.
And absolutely. I agree.
Yeah, no one lifted a finger. No one, of course, we're talking about it right now, and with good reason, because we're addressing all of these issues. This is certainly pertinent to the amount of mind control and brainwashing that has occurred to keep people from knowing who they are. So this has every bit of relevance to what we're talking about here. And maybe we should have that case, that decision repealed. Maybe we should file some documentation asking for a judicial board of review to revoke that judge's ability to sit on the bench or to practice law. Maybe we should be pushing to have the American Civil Liberties Union done away with. Because I see no union there. Not with the... I'm sorry, you were saying?
I don't think there's any maybe involved.
Well,
I'm just flabbergasted that America swallowed this. I mean, I'm the first one to admit that I'm not a very religious person. I have certain beliefs, and they don't necessarily coincide with organized religions. But I love and respect the religions of the world because they are efforts of particular people to find a path to God, and they should be allowed to do what they want to do in that regard. It harms no one. Now, who is the individual who brought up the complaint, if in fact he exists, and who is the government to start telling you how you're going to relate to God? I mean, and that's what it's coming down to. It isn't just a question of we can't have the Ten Commandments in municipal buildings, and it isn't just a question of the fact that we can't have a public crash at Christmas time. It's the same old story that some handful of hooligans is telling us, the rest of the nation, how they want us to behave. And I don't see anybody saying, wait a minute, I'm not going to do that. It's just like everybody cowers in their boots and says, oh, gee, I better listen because, someone in authority said that. Well, that's what's wrong. I mean, that's the crux of the whole issue right there. Because if they can do it with the Christmas creche, and they can do it with the Ten Commandments, and they can do it with prayers in schools, then what else are they going to aim at next? And they can have another stooge stand up and say whatever he wants to say that needs to be eliminated because secretly they don't want us to have it.
Yeah, there's a, I think this is along the same line, in a sense. There's a article that came out, was published on Rents.com, written by Tom Fife. I've read a few of his pieces over the past couple of years. And he's alluding to a couple from Russia back in the 1980s that described someone who was being prepared for the presidency of the United States. He was going to be a communist. His name was Barack, and he was black. The story was that he was born in Hawaii, and he was his father was an African, and this person was going to instill communism on behalf of the so at the time it was the Soviet Union. Very interesting story that this should come out and no one's even raising an eyebrow over this. Now, I don't know how many people have read it, but I would presume a lot, and after I mentioned it here on this show, more are going to look at it. But it falls in line with my research, and it falls in line with the research Webster Tarpley did, and Jerome Corsi, and Andy Martin, and Leo D'Onofrio, although he's pursuing the issue of John McCain. Now the story about John McCain is that John McCain was born on a ship. Get this now. Because my story about there was no hospital for 7 years for him to be born in, and he's not born in the record there in the Panama Canal Zone. Now it's a ship. Pretty soon it's going to be Hawaii. Then it's going to be at Brad Pitt's house or Lynn Cheney's house, because all these people are related. I mean, the fallacies and the lies just come from every angle. And yet no one seems to be able to get a grip and remember all of this stuff. Of course, I spend time connecting the dots, so these stick out like sore thumbs every time something comes out. I've debunked McCain's background. I've debunked Obama's background. Now they want to make Hillary Clinton the Secretary of State. I'm ready to debunk her background and show her true genealogy. Is that going to matter to anyone that none of these people are even Americans? We have this fundamental argument here, Jim, that this is part of the law to be able to hold office in this country. But these people seem to be able to get away with it with impunity.
Well, the only reason that they're getting away with it is because Americans are so darn ignorant. And they don't understand that these fundamental issues are the pillar stones or the cornerstones of their rights and their freedoms. And by being able to ignore those rights and ignore those foundations laid down by people who gave their lives to form this nation, we are changing the very fabric of this country into something very ugly. I mean, these are the same exact things that were done in Germany before the emergence of the Nazi Party, for goodness sake.
Yes, yeah, we've had this discussion numerous times too, and it's catching
on.
Yeah, well, it is catching on with some people, but not in the numbers that we would like to see. And so they just keep moving on, like, you know, who cares? As long as it's not on TV, it's not there, as long as they're not talking about it on TV and the boob tube, it's okay. In other words, we've got the people brainwashed and we just move on forward, and whether it's stealing billions or trillions more from us or murdering someone or murdering large numbers of people, none of it matters. None of it matters. It certainly doesn't matter to them.
No, but it sure should matter to the rest of the people, though.
Well, obviously. I mean, that's
you're talking about people that have no moral fiber whatsoever. You know, they're totally seduced by their love of power and wealth that they don't deserve, and they will step on and squash anyone or anything to achieve their goals. They don't have a love for anything, not even themselves.
That's
so
true.
They're not interested in the heritage of this nation. They're not interested in people's rights. They're not interested in anything except being in a position where they can give orders and essentially separate you from your wealth. And the interesting thing about it is, if they ever succeed in doing all the things that they want to do, they will probably go mad, because then there'll be nothing left to do. You know, it's an obsession. It's a disease. And if people really understood that they're essentially electing diseased individuals to run their lives for them.
Mm-hmm. Let's run through a sequence of events for a moment, and let's look how insane this is. We had 9/11. I'll come back to that topic. We had 9/11 basically 15 years after the FBI met with Osama bin Laden, who was going by the name of Tim Osman, as a CIA agent working in Afghanistan, fighting with Afghan rebels who were at war with Russia. And they were giving him arms and cash and missiles, computer software, and red mercury, which is extremely dangerous, okay? So you're talking about nuclear materials being given to the world's most wanted terrorist, being given to him at the Hilton Hotel in Sherman Oaks, California, is where this occurred. The former head of the FBI, the supervisory special agent, Ted Gunderson, who was at that time the head of the Los Angeles division of the FBI, was in on that meeting. And several other individuals, one who's in prison now because they wanted to move him out of the way, Michael Reconosciuto. And there were a few other characters there with them, okay? Now, move up to 9/11. We have these three skyscrapers that are just cut like butter with a hot knife, brought down to powder and a pile of rubble only a few stories high, despite the fact that two of the buildings were 110 stories, free fall straight downward in a matter of seconds. And I remind the listening audience, it was caused by, according to them, jet fuel burning, which is kerosene, and 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters brought those buildings down. Now, we're assuming that the government story is true. The boogeyman, the world's most wanted criminal now, was Osama bin Laden, who was sitting somewhere in a cave in the mountains of Afghanistan. Now, they went to look for him several times, actually went after him, found him, and let him get away intentionally, because they knew all along who he was and that he was actually working for the powers that be. They had to have a boogeyman. They also knew he was very sick. He was very ill. He had kidney problems. Now, they had to create a war. They had to go after somebody after they had determined that he was the bad guy, he was the boogeyman. And then they created the story that Saddam Hussein, who was also a creation of the CIA, who had been used previously to fight an 8-year war with Iran, which resulted in countless deaths on both sides, and they, under the auspice of him harboring, even though bin Laden wasn't there, but now all of a sudden he's harboring bin Laden's people, the people being trained for Al-Qaeda, which also was a CIA creation. But nobody pays attention to that because they're not telling us this. I'm telling you, the listening audience, this, but they don't tell us that. And we don't think to do our homework and find out who the heck they're even talking about. They go into Iraq. They start killing people left and right under the guise of freedom. They're bringing democracy and freedom to these people. They've probably killed 1.5 million and caused anywhere from 3.5 to 4.5 million people to flee the country as refugees. That's freedom? That's democracy? This is what they're selling us. That's what they're doing, and they're presenting it as if, what is democracy? They're going to have the right to vote? Are you telling me that there were 1.5 million Al-Qaeda people that they killed? These were men, women, and children that had nothing to do. These people weren't armed. They had nothing to do with Osama bin Laden bringing down the World Trade Center or attacking the Pentagon or a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, well, all of which he did from remote control from a cave in the middle.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Now, what short memories we have, but they keep uttering these mantras, you know, terrorists, terrorists here and terrorists there. And all these terrorist events were always planned by governments anyway. The London train bombings, they went after the trains in Madrid because Spain pulled out of the war. They wanted nothing to do with it. So they retaliated. Why would you bomb a nightclub in Bali? What's the purpose of that? Other than to just kill people. Get your jollies from murdering more people. That's all that's been going on, is just wanton murder and torture. They picked up people that are being charged as terrorists, and they're not responsible for what happened on 9/11, but they've got them in a prison in Cuba, torturing them. And then you have these ridiculous arguments. Is waterboarding torture? Putting a rag over somebody's face and pouring water on it so they can't breathe, so they're drowning while they're restrained to a table or a bench. This is the type of insanity that's going on, and somehow we're to fear the people that this is being done to? We've got our priorities all wrong. And we have no reasoning abilities anymore. And talk about thinking or discerning from the heart. We can't even discern with the mind, let alone the heart. So we have all these scenarios going on, and yet I talk about this, and now I'm called a conspiracy theorist. They came up with this term that these are theories now. I thought theorems were in science and math. But I guess now when it comes to politics and you're describing how people are destroying a country, it's called a theory.
Well, that's because it's politically correct.
Yes. It's just another fabrication of the intelligence agencies, force-fed to the media. That's all it is. Somehow we can't seem to wake up to these things and confront them. Is it because of fear? Is it because of ignorance? Is it just plain stupidity? Or just apathy? Why care? I'm just one person.
I think it's a combination of things, Don, to be honest with you. And one of them is denial. And that's the thing that really bugs me. We don't want it to be true, therefore we assume that it isn't. The problem with that is, by the time it's evident enough to prove to you that it's true, it's too late to do anything about it. And that's been proven over and over and over again down through the ages, not just in our time. You have to look at the thing the way it really is and get your emotions out of it. You have to look at the facts like you do when you do your research. And you have to make judgment calls based on what's really happening, not on what you wish was happening. I wish it was 1952. But it isn't.
At the top of the show, I alluded to the fact that some people, and it's many people, it's probably a majority of people, just prefer to turn and look the other way as if the problem's going to disappear. Or it's for the Messiah, it's for the Savior that they're waiting to come and solve the problem. It's left for that individual, whoever that might be. But I find it interesting now that they have chosen now a communist to be their president. And just look at the appointees going on, or look at the research that shows that he's not who he said he is. Somehow that doesn't bother anybody. certainly doesn't bother anybody in the government.
Well, gee, I wonder why.
It's something that's just beyond comprehension, how people can just allow this to go on. Now, there are many people, oh, no, you don't know what you're saying. Oh, this person is going to save the country. Save us what? Or this person is going to change the country. What kind of change? All I see on the horizon from what I've seen, and he's not even in the office, is it's going to be a change for the worse. Because you've been lied to. You've been lied to about who he is. By himself, we've been lied to. And it's in writing that it's lies. Forged documents. It just doesn't end. Somehow, and you hit it on the head when you said denial, because people are in denial, and that's, you know, you might as well be an ostrich and stick your head in the sand. Just remember that when you do that, your rear end is up in the air. It makes a good target.
That's for sure.
Well, you know, we're talking about these things, and obviously we're not talking about them from a perspective of fear, although we're alluding to the fear that's prevalent. And I really think, you know, I wonder a couple of times during this conversation, Jim, it entered my mind, what would Nikola Tesla have accomplished if every time the danger of his work became the predominant force behind what he was doing? It would have paralyzed him every time.
Oh, absolutely. And I got news for you. It does. Let's take the topic that I'm familiar with, you know, which is the investigation of alternate energy means. There is such a stigma associated with this stuff that it's unbelievable. You know, there might be some people that are hopeful that something will come about who might regard you in a hero's light. But the majority of people think you're crazy. The scientific establishment won't have anything to do with you. And there's no available data that you can look to, you know, for comparison to your work so that you can make an intelligent study of what's been done in the past. Because all of that is suppressed or unavailable. And it just goes on and on and on. But the real reason behind the whole thing is they don't want a change in the status quo. And it turns out that science, which I used to worship as a kid because I thought it was the grand gateway to ultimate truth, science is actually more political in a lot of ways than politics. And scientists are not open-minded. They are some of the most prejudiced people on Earth. And we talked about the mechanisms involved in the so-called programming of the scientific mind and what happens if they're presented with facts which are contrary to that programming. The tilt signs come on. You know, and it's the same thing over and over again. It's manifesting in different areas of our lives, but it's always the same thing. Everything is taught as an absolute truth, when in reality, it isn't. And it shouldn't be introduced that way, because it brings with it all of these negative consequences. And I always thought that it was the job of the scientist to find new stuff, discover more laws of nature, you know, push the frontiers of our understanding further, develop new technologies, and slowly elevate mankind to a higher level of consciousness. So But that's all been changed. It's not the agenda. And I'll never fit into the whatever the heck the agenda is, I can tell you that. And I'm not afraid to stand alone. But there aren't enough people that have that attitude. And the only way that that's going to change is if they start facing their fears, expanding their consciousness, and looking at the world the way it really is, instead of the way they wish it were.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with everything you said. Well, we're out of time here, Jim. As usual, this show comes to an end at the end of the week. And, you know, we touched on a lot of topics. I hope the listening audience got something out of this discussion. We need to be reminded of these things. I don't think we can remind people too many times, especially since they're reminded about so many untruths to the extent that they actually become beliefs. And the only things that most people will accept are these illusions that we've been discussing. Just a little bit of ordinary conversation reveals how ridiculous, how insane this stuff is. And we so readily accept this. I suppose if we were in a position to see this from the outside and not be emotionally involved in it, not having a stake in the future, how do you think we would look at what we're seeing? You know, let's say through the eyes of someone from another planet that was watching what's happening here. How do you think they would see it?
I think they'd be amazed at the displays of neurotic and psychotic behavior and lack of consciousness and just about every negative thing imaginable. The problem is that we're so immersed in it that it's become a way of life. And that's one of the reasons why most people don't perceive it. But if there are some aliens watching, I'm sure they're totally demoralized, you know, by this time, because this kind of stuff has been going on for hundreds of years here. It's not just a recent innovation.
Oh yeah, for thousands of years, and it's, you know, it's not just these programs themselves or these policies that have carefully been constructed and enforced and reinforced, but it's the almost let's say the perverse application of technology in a destructive mode, destroying or countering natural law, universal law. If there is a sin, I would say that's one of them, although you won't read about that in any of the religious books. It's the affront to God from a technological angle. And it always raises the question, who is behind this? Ultimately, who is behind this? Maybe we could answer that question next week. What do you say?
I think it would be an interesting show, but I have a suggestion in that regard also. You know, that you and I have been trying to encourage people to phone in for 2 years now. And partake in an active part in the show. And to my knowledge, at least on my watch, only two people that I can think of who ever phoned, you know, to take part in the show. But yet you say that people are much more inclined to send faxes and emails to you after the show. So if that's the case, then what I would suggest is the listening audience tell us the kind of things you want to hear expounded upon. Let us know what kind of topics you want us to help explain or elucidate or otherwise touch upon, and I'm sure that we can build a whole show around that kind of stuff. Wouldn't you say so, Don?
Sure, that's a great idea.
Well, in that sense, I mean, if they're going to write to you anyway, they might as well tell us what they want to hear us talk about.
Yeah, and we could put a caveat in there that it requires a phone call. You send an email, you've got to call into the show.
Yeah, I mean, if they give us a suggestion of something that's valuable for them, then it would make perfect sense that while we're discussing that topic, that they call in and join in with us in its exploration.
Yeah. Well, I took the liberty to sort of address this aspect of fear and our perception of what's going on, because our lack of perception or our misinterpretation feeds that fear. And that's, of course, that's done to us with obvious intention. But the reason for doing that is to face it and not pretend like it doesn't exist. It's an element, really, of what is going on that so many people are afraid to talk about. And the listening audience does say that they don't choose to interrupt the flow of information that's coming out. So I'll honor that. And I'll take your suggestion. Hopefully they will, and we'll see. Wouldn't they be surprised if we had nothing to talk about next week because no one sent in any suggestions?
Well, it'd be interesting to generate a show where we had 2 hours of silence interrupted by a commercial here and there.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Well, Jim, I want to thank you for your input tonight and your wisdom and your brilliant outlook on things. Hopefully we've shown the light of truth on this topic to the extent that people will take some action and help to recreate a future for this planet and for us, for all of us. We need to come to the realization that our thoughts and our deeds, or our inaction, our refusal to think and or do anything, is equally responsible for the way things are today.
Actually, sometimes it's more responsible.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? There was an old expression about the greatest thing to proliferate evil is for good people to do nothing.
Mm-hmm. And to repeat the same mistakes over and over again, but somehow from the misconception that the reapplication of a solution that doesn't work is somehow going to make it work.
Yeah,
so
I
thank you for your input and look forward to next week. Hopefully we'll get some emails in and we'll have some things to talk about.
Very good, Don. Thank you for having me on, and you have a wonderful weekend.
Okay, and I wish you a happy Thanksgiving. I won't be talking to you until the day after. So wish you the best.
Same to you, Don. Thank you.
Okay, and I say to the listening audience, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and Jim Murray will be back with us next Friday. Tune in again. We have Tom James from Hemp USA with us on Monday, and some great guests throughout the week. Special thanks go to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, the listening audience for tuning in. I wish you a wonderful weekend and a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.